You are listening to the Team Flower Podcast, where we talk about flowers and the people who have dedicated their lives to sharing them with the world. My name is Kelly, founder of Team Flower, and I'll be your host today. Attaching giant arrangements of flowers to buildings. Today's guests, Natalia and Fiona of Pyrus, have done just that. Their work for the Inspiring Impressionism exhibit will leave you breathless and with questions about how it came together. But the good news is, on this episode, they'll answer those questions, learn what they're looking for while they do a site visit, and what the next steps are after that. Their partnership is inspiring and has given them quite a bit of courage. Learn about their unique backgrounds and why their partnership is flourishing. Looking for some new Instagram accounts to follow outside the realm of flower world? Natalia and Fiona are sharing some of their favorites. A balanced life is really important to both our guests. Get a peek inside what this looks like for them. They're also sharing about their fantastic walled garden project and all the flowers that they are growing inside. It's all right here on the Team Flower Podcast. This podcast is brought to you by the 2018 Team Flower Conference, the future of our industry. We're gathering in March of 2018 at the Reunion Resort in Florida to be purposeful about where our industry is headed and the legacy we will leave behind to the next century of floral industry professionals. Get connected in a mastermind group, enjoy stage presentations and panels, and speak into what our industry will grow to look like during our lifetime. Being in a room with people like you is something that can't be replaced by online resources. Those can only take you so far. Come and join us in person. You can find the most up-to-date information at teamflower.org/conference. Pyrus is based in Edinburgh, Scotland. Welcome, Fiona and Natalia. All right. Well, welcome, Natalia and Fiona. We're so glad to have you on the Team Flower Podcast today. We wanted to just chat with you about a few questions, and I know that both of you have a background in art, and I was wondering if you could tell us a little bit more about this and how you feel like this has maybe helped you in your work with flowers and using flowers as your medium.
Well, yeah, we both studied at different art colleges. I studied design and applied arts and specialised in ceramics. And what was yours, Tam?
I did fine arts, so quite different disciplines.
Yeah, so it's a really interesting working together because the way that we learnt to process things at art college was very different. So with ceramics, everything was very much designed through from beginning to end. And you looked at lots of different design eventualities and had to think about kind of how things were structured and put together, which turns out to be pretty much the opposite of the way that Natalia learned.
Yeah, fine art is all about the process rather than the final result. So it's much more organic. So we come from very different places, but I think that a visual education really helps you to think creatively and spatially. And that when that comes to kind of sculptural forms using flowers, I think that's really valuable. And it gives you a certain sort of way to visually communicate that I think has been really useful in our studio.
Yeah, it's certainly, I certainly think it's helped our process a lot, hasn't it, of kind of being able to get to the end product and the end design and working out the best path to do that. Yeah. So between the differences in the way that we've learned, we generally find that we come with a quite a well-balanced and well-rounded end design.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Speaking of design, I wonder what maybe some of your favorite elements or maybe your favorite element of design is. Like, do you prefer color or texture, shape or size? What's really a place that you kind of find yourself returning to again and again?
That's a tricky question because we probably enjoy the whole design process as a whole, actually. I think that I enjoy the conceptual stage, actually considering what it is about a project, what we're going to do, thinking about the whole design. And I love the color element. I think that that sensitivity towards colour and thinking about how you can communicate an idea visually through colour is really special.
Yeah, I think with all the things you mentioned, I'm generally instinctively drawn to textures And I don't know if that's part to do with my upbringing. I feel like the Scottish landscape is quite textural and rugged, so that's always
and wild.
Yeah, and I feel like that's often comes through in our work with the materials that are available to us.
Yeah, absolutely. I would agree. You guys have done a lot of really large installations on buildings in the city, and I saw a little video that you had done with Birch from New York City you were doing like the installation in the city. And I was wondering if you would mind sharing your process for, like you were saying, that conceptualizing of the idea and turning it into some of these really show-stopping projects that you share with us. And along with that, some of the florists within our community, you know, have asked questions about how do you secure the flowers or, you know, make sure that there aren't damage to walls. I know on your Instagram post, some people had some questions about that as well. Tell us what kind of tips that you have for things like this.
I think that with any site-specific installation or something that's outdoors or when you're working on a building, then the idea very much takes form through that specific place. So that's the thing that we consider first of all. So the first thing is to do a really thorough site visit. So we will go and visit, look at the space, look at the building, look at what we're working with. And then often the ideas form around that rather than trying to make a piece fit to a certain space. It's really important to think about the kind of the conditions and the restrictions of where you're working. So things like weather can really influence what you can do, particularly if something's going to be in place for a while. And also you need to think about things like weight distribution and allocation when you're on the working on the outside of something. And there's a lot of health and safety that comes into play as well.
Yeah, we generally find with the bigger installations, if we are in any kind of doubt whatsoever, we'll call in our production team and take advice from them, especially with the bigger, more permanent installations that we've worked on. We also have quite a lot of connections in the event industry, so we have lots of people that we can go to and find out about whether we should be using a certain kind of frame or if there's rigging, a better kind of clip. So we ask a lot of questions and do a lot of research before we commit to doing a final design.
Sometimes you'll need a surveyor to come in as well just to have a look and see you know, if something can actually be done before you arrive on the day and try and put it in place. But in terms of fixing, you know, most buildings and venues, particularly historic buildings, they will not allow you to put fixings in. So you have to find another way and you have to design around that. So we will always look for tying points. For example, we use a lot of cable ties and fixings. We will anchor things to the ground. So we'll use like concrete bases, sheets of wire mesh. You know, we're always trying to look at the alternatives. And that's where the weight distribution comes back into play as well, because you might only be able to tie in like, I don't know, two or three different places, but you have to make an enormous installation hang off that. So there's a bit of physics involved, which isn't our strong point, actually. But yeah, we're learning. We're learning slowly. But I think the main thing for us with an installation is that when it's taken away, you shouldn't be able to see that we've been there at all. You know, you have to tread lightly and you have to respect the site.
Yeah. And I think we tend to always do a lot of what we call disaster prevention. So we kind of think about all the eventualities, all the things that could go wrong, and then make sure that none of them can ever happen.
Don't tie one knot, tie five knots.
Not tying. That's one of the things. That's one of the things they don't necessarily teach you in flower school.
Well, it's really valuable. I think we've probably had about three or four different guys in fishing shops now teach us how to do all these kind of like special fishing knots.
Definitely speak to the fishermen. They know, they have a knot for every kind of situation.
That's awesome. So you'd mentioned that you might bring some of these things to your production team or a surveyor. What would the specific roles of the people on the production team be? Like, would you consider that fisherman one of the people that you would sort of loop into that a little bit to ask some questions? What are those people?
probably on an advisory level, but we have had people that have, you know, they've got like a license to use a cherry picker, for example, so they will be able to hoist a very large scale installation, or they will rig a pulley, or they'll rig a hook for us, or we did a big job on the museums in Scotland last year.
And is that what the picture was on your Instagram? Was that the museum?
So the one, I think the recent one, no, that was actually for a wedding. The museum we did, they've got like 8 enormous pillars on the front of the main gallery in Edinburgh. And they wanted all of the brief was to cover all of those 8 pillars top to toe in flowers for the duration of like 3 months.
This is a very difficult briefing.
Yeah.
How are we going to make this possible?
And it wasn't achievable to like cover all 8 top to bottom for various health and safety reasons and budget reasons. But we did a section. And so they brought in a team that they were familiar with that works on those pillars and does a lot of wraps on them for their signage. So what they did is they put a PVC wrap on the face of the pillar, and then we used ratchet straps to ratchet the actual flowers on a bed of wire mesh. And what that meant is that the flowers in the wire mesh and the ratchet straps were against the plastic rather than the stone of the pillar, so it wasn't damaged.
Yeah, so it essentially had a protective PVC layer underneath all of our workings that was bonded together, so it meant there was no actual fixings attached to the building.
Yeah.
So there's always kind of, or there tends to always be a way around things and how to do things, but sometimes it just requires asking a few more questions. We work quite closely with some lighting designers as well, so they're used to hanging up heavy pieces of equipment for different kinds of events. So we generally make lots of connections along the way and ask a lot of questions and knock on a lot of doors.
right, absolutely. So whenever you're headed to do your initial site visit, you said you were looking for places to rig. What would be some more checklist items that you're kind of like taking notes on as you're doing that site visit?
Well, if you come across a venue that has kind of bare exposed beams, then that's a winner. That's the ideal kind of venue because you've got something very strong overhead that you can attach to. We would always be looking for fixings that are part of the building, so you would never attach to anything like a light fitting or conduits or anything that's been added onto the building. You want something that's kind of structurally a part of it.
But sometimes it's just not possible as well. I think that the majority of clients come to us asking for installation pieces, and you know, sometimes we have to go back to them and say it can't really be done for that site, and give them alternatives. So I think it's being sort of true to yourself and the possibilities, and not putting yourself in a position where you're really stressed about it and you don't think you're going to be able to achieve it to the best of your ability and to how you feel it should actually look. You know, so I think that there's a time and a place for installations, and we do only do them when we feel it's possible, you know. And sometimes it just doesn't work for various reasons.
If somebody's really, really keen to have an installation and it's something like a lovely old Georgian townhouse and there's no fixings, we'll put forward a design which moves upwards rather than downwards, and we can use weighted bases. So we have
freestanding structures.
So you can put structures in place that have the help of gravity to keep them secure and safe. But we would also point out, I guess, is that when you are putting a structure in place, to always make sure that your structure is smaller than what you want your finished piece to be, because ultimately that structure must always be completely covered. The worst thing in the world is if you can see the workings. You know, there's this potentially this magical piece that seems to have grown in situ, and then you can see a big wire or a metal pole inside it or a little chink of concrete peeping out.
Yeah, exactly. That's really helpful. Thank you so much for sharing that. I know that's going to help a lot of people who are listening and just have maybe been wondering about some of those things. It's a little bit mysterious.
We have literally learned on the job. So yeah. I don't think that there's any wrong or right. And I think it's confidence. Yeah. And I think that that's the main thing, is knowing that nobody really knows a surefire way to do these things. It's just asking a lot of questions, yeah. taking a lot of time to prepare. Maybe doing a few mock-ups, see what works, see what doesn't work, and then in time you just get more confident yeah. with these things.
And I think yeah. we have the benefit that we have two heads. Mm-hmm. So I'm pretty sure if a lot of these design ideas, if it was just me on my own, I would talk myself out of it. But uh-huh. because there's two of us,
we're quite brave together.
Yeah, we egg each other on. And so what might seem like a mad idea, you know, the other person will say, okay, well, how are we going to do that? And then we'll take it from there. So I definitely think we have that as an advantage.
Yeah, very good. I love that. Well, tell us about some artists maybe that you admire that are outside of the flower world. I wondered if there were any values or philosophies or design principles that are present in their work that inspire you.
There's lots. Where do you start? I think that we're inspired by all sorts of people. I mean, I was thinking about this question and I made so many notes, and it's like, well, who do I talk about? You know, because I think anyone that's creative, anyone that's doing anything interesting, whether that's a poet or a painter or a sculptor, a musician, a dancer, you know, I think you can be inspired by so many things and kind of take those with you with your ideas. But there's a few people that stand out for me. I really love the fire poet, Robert Montgomery. He uses poetry and then makes site-specific sculptural conceptual pieces that he sets on fire. So it's that combination of kind of conceptual art, but also an immersive experience, but also using words. It's very, very powerful. And then there's musicians, you know, I suppose like Kate Bush would have to be, you know, the ultimate in sort of like pushing expression and bringing something
we have
really
a lot
special.
Of Kate Bush yeah. references in our work. Like
we love
on
Kate
a daily
Bush.
Basis.
And recently, musicians like Max Richter, I've found really inspiring. And then actors like Tilda Swinton, because again, she works cross medium. So, you know, she's an actor, she's a performer. She works with artists. She, you know, is working cross medium. So for me, it's people that aren't pigeonholed mm-hmm. and that aren't scared of doing something new, aren't scared of fitting in, and are quite brave and sort of working across visual mediums that yeah. inspire me.
Yeah. I remember coming across Andy Goldsworthy really quite early on. It must have been at art college. And it being the first artist that I saw that was really crossing boundaries with art and nature. And that, I think that really inspired me. I don't think that you can ever create anything better than nature. But I think what he does is he presents things in a way that makes you look at it a little bit differently and think about it and relate to it differently. And I remember feeling like that was a bit of a pivotal point for me. When I discovered him as an artist. And of course, Azumo Makoto, but I don't know if he counts as being outside of the flower world, but just...
He does it in a different way, though, doesn't he?
He's a real hero. You know, everything he does is just... I've never seen any of his pieces of work that I thought was dull or uninteresting.
He's paved the way, I think, for a different approach in the flower industry and as an artist. I think that he's quite an important figure, actually. Yeah.
Wow. Thank you for sharing these different people. And I think that one of the keys and why I wanted to ask this question, I knew you guys would have some great suggestions, because whenever we do stay within the realm of flowers, you know, a lot of us are frequently on Instagram, and that's kind of the place where we're seeing a lot of things come through, but we're all following flower people. And whenever you kind of look outside into some of these other artists and the other types of mediums that they're using, and you really start digging into what are those philosophies and principles that are in their work and what makes them really intriguing and interesting, it can be so inspirational in helping you kind of jump out of what you're used to seeing and to create some really special, you know, some really special pieces just to kind of jog your brain a little bit.
Yeah.
Are there any non-related Instagram accounts that you ladies follow that you would recommend?
Lots. And I actually think that it's, for me personally, it's quite important not to get bogged down with too many flowers, because I think that you can look at almost too much and then you don't know what your place is within it.
Yes,
and you don't know what your thing is as well.
Right.
Because there's so much beautiful stuff to look at.
You can compare yourself as well and always think, oh, that's, you know, my work isn't as good as that, or maybe I should be doing what that person's doing. Or so I think it's really, really key to sort of spread your net quite wide, actually. And it's a very, it's very personal. So I think that there is, you know, probably thousands of accounts out there, and they will all appeal to different people. But I've got, you know, for me, I follow lots of different magazines. So we follow magazines like Rakes Progress, which is a horticultural magazine, and they're, you know, they're doing amazing things for horticulture and floriculture and really kind of opening it up. You know, the World of Interiors blog is, Instagram is really inspiring. It's quite historical, but it's very inspiring. And then there's other sites like Verite Published. There's Under the Influence magazine. There's then studios working like Nick Knight's Show Studio, which is kind of more fashion based, but it's quite cutting edge and avant-garde. And then there's other accounts, things like Trendland, that's across the board. That's obviously quite big, but across the board, it will kind of show you design, architecture, products, places. The New Craftsman, that's another one that I really love, that will kind of show you lots of really beautiful artisan work and crafts. So there's so many, but we also follow lots of travel blogs, food blogs, you know, cooks. There's different artists, you know, it's quite niche, and I feel like I almost fall in and out of love with different accounts dependent on what time of year it is, how I'm feeling, whether I'm tired, you know, what I'm kind of lacking, or what feel that I need to kind of look at to sort of get a bit of creative inspiration.
Well, and I think something that I noticed about a lot of the places that you mentioned is that they are they're like a connection point. So they're featuring a lot of different artists, there's a lot of different things coming through each of those one places. So it's not like you're just following one person, you're following, you know, the culmination of a lot of different people.
And that can sort of take you off on a little journey. It's a bit like Pinterest, you know, how you start looking at Pinterest and then you'll see something which relates to a picture, and then that will take you off somewhere. And like 2 hours later, you find that you're looking at like a whole thread of, I don't know, like really crazy sculpture, you know, using embroidery and dead bees or something. And you're like, how have I got to this point from like researching that wedding or something? And I think that that's the beauty of it, is like you're constantly sort of taking on information and sort of like feeding your soul a little bit, you know?
Absolutely. So good. Well, I was wondering how you two work together. I was wondering if you take turns or leads on different creative projects, or do you take a more collaborative approach, kind of tossing it back and forth? What works for you guys?
Well, when we started, we spent a long time discussing how we would think we would like it to work. And we had lots of discussions about what we felt our strengths and weaknesses were, and what we enjoyed and what we didn't. And thankfully, in terms of the business, it was all opposites. So the things that I didn't enjoy doing, Natalia was very good at, and vice versa. So the day-to-day running of things is generally quite clearly split. But when it comes to creative projects, we always work as a collaboration.
Yeah, we spend a lot of time bouncing ideas off each other. I think there are times when we're both drawn to different projects and one of us will naturally lead it, dependent on what the brief or the aesthetic or the client wants. But yeah, we definitely work as collaborators and kind of boost and feed off each other on a project from beginning to end, you know, from concept all the way through the design process to, you know, foraging, sourcing materials, and then the installation.
Yeah, and I think within that there's areas that we prefer and then don't prefer so much. So, for example, Natalia is a very good creative writer, so she tends to take the lead with putting the proposals together. I'm a natural worrier, so I'll generally kind of work on the logistics and the structural side of things and how it's all gonna come together. But it's always a really enjoyable process, and when we're actually on site and putting a piece together, that's really kind of the highlight of our job, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely.
Oh, that's so fun. Well, it sounds like communication is definitely a really important part of a solid partnership, and a lot of self-awareness too, and just chatting back and forth. Yeah. And
it's really good for you, I think. Mm-hmm. Actually, because I think, you know, you get, I don't know, I think we're both quite strong-minded, so actually sort of having another person there to sort of say, actually, I think this might work better, or have you thought of that, and that other set of eyes is incredibly valuable, you know, when you're talking about visual communication, it's really lovely to sort of have the support.
Mm. And I think particularly, you know, at times where it's peak season and everything is so busy,
it's crazy,
that just having another set of eyes to look at something and go, okay, that needs that, or it doesn't need that, or that's okay, is really valuable.
Yeah. When you've had 4 hours sleep and you don't actually know what your name is anymore.
Well, my next question was, when you're feeling exhausted creatively, what do you do for a little refresh? That's a perfect lead-in.
Well, what we actually do, I think that both of us would say that time out is so crucial. Yeah. You know, for anyone that has a creative business, or anyone that is running their own business, it is so important to take time out. And the way that we tend to manage it is, we actually take time off during the winter. So when our flower garden is sleeping, we take a month off and we shut everything down and we go away. And during that month, you know, we might travel, you know, see our friends, catch up with our family, read, cook, write, paint, make pots, you know, whatever that is. But that time to kind of reset and rebalance is so incredibly important to us.
Yeah, definitely. And I think even, you know, it's difficult, because the times where you most need a little bit of time out is the times where you don't have time to do that. So in our calendar, if there's ever a little quiet weekend, or the odd weekend where we've nothing booked in, you know, for us, even just a night away in the borders of Scotland, or a couple of nights on an island on the west coast, just removing yourself from the situation, getting back into nature and just stopping, really, really is incredibly valuable. I think that's generally what keeps us sane.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, and time in the garden.
Yeah,
as well,
I was going
to
add that. Yeah.
You know, with the garden that we're working in, the walls there are so high that when you're inside there, you really feel like you're cut off from the world. So even when everything is crazy and the emails are built up, and you know what it's like, all the inquiries all come in at the same time, that if we take a day in the garden, everything's fine. Everything's kind of brought back down to ground level.
Yeah.
You can think about things clearly. So
right.
It is a tricky one, because when you're feeling so exhausted and backed up, it is quite difficult to say, do you know what, I'm just going to go away, or I'm just going to spend the afternoon in the garden and tending the flowers. But it's definitely, definitely worth it.
I think, though, it's also learning not to beat yourself up too much about feeling tired and, you know, being busy, because I think we all talk a lot about work-life balance these days, and like the perfect life. And you see all these like so-called perfect lives on Instagram and on social media. And actually, I think that we're coming to the conclusion that there is no perfect work-life balance, and that, you know, what you see on social media isn't necessarily the reality. And it is just taking those snatched moments when you can, sort of trying to enjoy every day. So making the studio fun, making the garden really lovely, lighting a barbecue, staying a bit longer, you know, when the sun sets, and just sort of trying to enjoy every day rather than it just being a real crazy rush all the time. And trying to make it more of a lifestyle than just a job, you know?
Yeah. And I think now I think this is now our sixth year.
Yeah.
That we're definitely much more tuned in to taking care of ourselves.
Yeah, self-care. Yeah.
And each other and the team, you know, and recognising when you need to stop, you know. And I think in the beginning, particularly when you're building a business up, you know, you really want it to be the best that it can be. And I think, like Natalia was saying, you can give yourself a hard time, and actually sometimes you just need to stop and take a break.
I think that's really, really good advice. Thank you for sharing that.
Counseling session with Pyrus.
Oh, yeah, that never hurts, absolutely. Well, tell us a little bit more about this garden project that you have. I think I read that you studied at the Botanic Garden.
Well, sort of.
Okay.
So when we started growing flowers, neither of us had had any, well, neither of us had had a garden before, had we?
Nope.
Neither of us had been in charge of plants solely on our own ever before. But we knew from really early on in our floristry career that we wanted to use local flowers. When we were training in a flower shop, there was a local rose grower who used to bring roses into the flower shop maybe once a week. And those roses were so divine. They were so, so different from the Dutch imports that we were used to seeing, that it really struck a chord with us. Mm. And at that time, just over 10 years ago, it was really difficult to get British flowers.
Yeah, there was a waiting list for those roses every week. They never even got put out. They, you know, just went in, you know, an instant.
Yeah,
so
they were absolutely divine. So then I heard about an organic farm in Fife, just a couple of hours outside of Edinburgh, and they mostly grew vegetables but had a small plot, for cut flowers. So I moved to Fife and took a part-time job there to learn how to grow flowers. And in the meantime, I did a couple of short courses at the Botanic Gardens in Edinburgh and got my certificate in practical horticulture. But it wasn't until we set up together that we really started to learn about how to grow flowers.
And there was a lot of learning through doing, wasn't there? And a lot of trial and error. But I think that, you know, you could go and have, you know, you could study for 4 or 5 years and in practical horticulture and then still talk to 10 other different professional gardeners and they would approach the same plant differently, you know. So I think that it's very much sort of experience. And this is our second garden. The first garden was much smaller. And it was so completely different. The soil was different. The site was different. It liked different plants. You know, different things thrived and did well. Different things died and didn't like it there. So it has, you know, even with a few years experience, it has been starting again, hasn't it, in this new site. So I think that there's, you know, probably we were foolish to begin with.
I mean, that first year, if I'm honest, was terrifying.
Yeah.
You know, there was so many questions. You know, when you're not confident, you doubt everything that you're doing. And the first year was hard, and it was a particularly bad season in Scotland as well.
Weather-wise.
It rained virtually.
Until August.
Oh, wow.
So nothing really started to flower. And we started to think, goodness, is this why there's nobody growing flowers in Scotland? You know, the weather just so bad, it's actually not possible. But then August came, the sun came out, everything came into bloom, and it was fine. But every year is very different in terms of weather. And every year we learn some new skills. And certainly from the experience that I got before we set up, I did learn that there are obviously, you know, techniques and ways to do things, but people do things in their own way, and they find the best way to do things for themselves. But again, kind of like with the installations, we talk to a lot of people, and we visit other gardens, and we share as much information as we can, to get a better idea of kind of the bigger picture of what our different options are.
Right. Well, what's your favorite thing that you have planted in the garden this year? What are you excited about coming up?
That's a hard question. We've just planted a whole load of garden roses.
Oh, yes. That's going to be amazing. So,
yeah. Okay. Excited about those this year. We have had roses in the past, but not in this volume and not in this garden. So it'll be exciting to see how those do.
Lovely brown foxgloves should follow this year.
Yeah. I have some of those out back, too.
Oh, do you?
Good, the chocolate?
Yeah.
They should come into flower this year as well.
And
so
we can compare notes.
Yeah.
lots of vines as well. We are just about to put up our second polytunnel, so we can sort of get the focus on lots of vines, and we like growing lots of fruit and veg as well, you know, something a little bit different, quite textural. So I mean there's so many things, and we're quite fickle, so you know, we feel like every year we kind of get a little bit tired of one thing, and then we sort of move on to a new color palette or a new texture or you know, new favorite flower.
And I do feel like working in this way of growing our own flowers is almost like a prolonged Christmas.
Yeah,
you know, so we buy all our seeds, we're doing all our sowing, and you've kind of got some hopes about what things might turn out like, but you're never completely sure what it is going to be like in real life. And sometimes there's disappointments, and then sometimes there's amazing discoveries that are our new favourite thing. So who knows is the way I feel about this year's crop.
Ask us again in September.
We were so excited about last year's dahlias, and we had some amazing dahlias, but there was quite a lot of them turned out to be colours that wasn't what we thought it was going to be like.
Right.
And then we had other things like our Barlotti beans that we didn't really think much of, but when they went to fruit, they were so incredibly beautiful, and we were using them in everything that we possibly could.
Mm.
So it feels like the garden provides us with a bit of a seasonal adventure, you know?
I like that. That's really fun. And I'm excited about your new polytunnel, because that'll help a lot with some of those weather fluctuations.
Absolutely.
And even just having quite a lot of rain, it'll provide some shelter and things like that, so they can get a little bit of a leg up.
Yeah.
That's so good. Well, tell me what's new, what's on the... what's on the agenda for you this year? Are there any workshops or opportunities that you have for people who might be interested in learning from you?
Yeah, we did some workshops in the very beginning, and then we started to do less so. But we found in the last year or so, we've had quite a lot of requests for workshops. So this year we are going to do some one-to-one tuition in our studio and our cutting garden.
Just a small number.
Yeah, just a few. But it should be a really beautiful day picking flowers in the garden. And
so it would be really lovely to welcome people, you know, into our space and get to see where they are kind of on their flower journey, or whether they're just starting out, or, you know, what they want to learn, and kind of tailor it to their needs. So we're excited about offering that this year.
Yeah, that'll be really fun. Well, you'll have that posted on the website or on your Instagram, I imagine, for anybody who's interested or looking for something like that.
That's like a scoop for you. No one else knows about that yet.
Nice. No, thank you for letting us know about it. And thank you so much for coming on and sharing with us today. It's been a really delightful conversation. I have loved having you guys.
Thank you so much for having us. It's been a total pleasure.
Yeah, it's been so nice to talk to you as well. Thanks for listening to our flower ramblings.
Absolutely. And thank you so much to everyone who's been listening. We're delighted to have you here on the Team Flower podcast, and a part of the story, of the flower story for the world. All right. We'll see you guys later. Bye. Thanks for listening, and remember the deep importance of the work you do. The flower is not just a flower, it's a conduit for passing the hope and love inside your heart to the people you share them with.